Welcome to this week's edition of the Sword and Staff. I'm one of your hosts, Josh Robinson, and joining me today, as always, is my co-host,
Sketchy Richie.
And on today's episode of the Sword and Staff, Richie and I are going to be getting into a conversation on the Slender Man, which really creeps me out, and then also thought forms.
Yep.
And should be an interesting conversation. I did not know what a thought form was until this past week, and I typically try to stay in the dark on a lot of this stuff.
Like staying blissfully ignorant.
We call him Sketchy Richie for a reason.
Yeah.
And I feel like it livens up the conversation. I feel like that if I'm kind of in the dark, it gives me the opportunity to react in real time whenever you say something sketchy on air.
Being in the know also keeps you being a guardrail in some sense. I mean,
it's very true.
Keep me from derailing this thing.
It's very true. And thankfully this week I did look at what a thought form was before we came on air, and I'm kind of glad that I did because it could have got into all kinds of sketchiness. I'm just kidding. You told me what you thought.
Not really.
What your views on this was, and they're not the same as what I found on the internet. So it wouldn't have really mattered a ton anyway. But I knew what the Slender Man was.
Everybody in the world probably has at least heard of the Slender Man.
Yeah, I think so. By this point, my wife's little cousin, his mom listens in on this show from time to time. Shout out to you, Marsha, if you're listening. He used to be into Slender Man, and I think he used to play some games like on his iPad and stuff like that. So I've heard about the Slender Man, and I think that everybody has at this point. So, yeah. But if people don't, I guess that they'll hear about it in today's episode if they don't know what the Slender Man is.
Right.
So it should be an interesting episode. We're going to have an interesting uncut section on today's podcast as well, because after we talk about the Slender Man and thought forms today, we're going to have a conversation on witch talk.
Right.
Yeah, because that's become a big thing.
Yep.
Right? And you're starting to see more Christians starting to engage with it and
people identifying as Christian witches on witch talk.
Yeah, we've actually had that in our own Sword and Staff group, didn't we? Which we were not down with that.
No.
If you didn't know.
Yep.
So we're not for Christian witches. So we're going to talk about that in the uncut portion. So if you're wanting to hear that conversation and hear what we have to say for in regards to witch talk, you're going to head on over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. For just $5 a month, you can get the Sword and Staff Uncut, where we're going to talk about things like today. And there's tons more perks for being a patron. We release content earlier there. We drop exclusive content that doesn't get dropped anywhere else. We do monthly Patreon Q&A videos where we let our patrons ask any question they want and we answer them. And so there's just a lot of perks to being a patron, right? Being a patron. And you guys can go on and get that. So, Richie, you got anything else you want to say before we jump into today's episode?
I'm ready to go.
All right. So let's get into the Slender Man. Okay. And then after we get into the Slender Man, we'll talk about thought forms, tulpas, that type of thing. So, from our research and what we've looked at, the story of the Slender Man came into being June 10th, 2009. And there was a man named Eric Knutson. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name right. But Eric Knutson. And basically what he was doing was he had entered into a paranormal Photoshop contest. And so they're telling people to create paranormal.
Was it on Creepypasta or was it somewhere else?
That's
where I came across the Slender Man app for the first time, was the stories people were posting on Creepypasta.
I think that that's around 2013, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's when Slender Man really kind of explodes is right there around then. But I could be wrong. There might have been creepypastas prior to that. My wife used to be into creepypastas, and so I think she ran into Slender Man there as well. But that was around 2013, something like that. She used to be, I think one of them was called Night Shift, or a website called Night Shift she used to read.
I remember vaguely something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. I never got into it. That was after my time. That was after my time.
Josh's time.
Yeah, and I saw the games and stuff, which we'll talk about some of those too. But so the story of Slender Man really starts in 2009. So, this is a little bit after we've been out of high school. But there was a Photoshop contest going on, creating paranormal creatures and things like that. And Eric Knudsen creates the Slender Man. Okay, and he creates it out of some photos of some kids and, you know, that kind of thing. Turns it black and white. And but while he creates it, he also creates a type of short story and lore to go along with the picture. And from there, it just goes and develops into this big, wild mythos. Yep. that's kind of like open source.
I was going to say it's an open source mythos. People add to it as it goes along.
Yeah, people add to it. So, yeah, so from there, after that, like it starts to kind of explode. People start adding their own lore throughout the years, their own stories of the Slender Man and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And then really find some popularity. Somebody, I don't know the name of the person who created it, but there was this was a big addition to the Slender Man lore. There was a story created by someone, somebody can correct me on or add the name in, I don't have it here in front of me, but it was called in German Der Grossmann, and is a story about the Slender Man from the 16th century. Okay, so there's this Slender Man who in the 16th century who's terrorizing people and that kind of thing. And the reason what they're trying to accomplish with Der Grossmann is they're trying to show that the Slender Man has been a figure that has been stalking people for centuries now, and since the dawn of time even. So that's what they're trying to do with it. So it's kind of adding to the lore, right? Then the most famous story of the Slender Man, I think this is where the creepypasta stuff starts to come into play. It was called Marble Hornets, and there's a video on YouTube.
Yep.
Video on YouTube that talks about it's like a college student photography, I think was what it was. It's on there. It has millions of views at this point. It's been on there since 2013. So, but it's on YouTube. But it's called Marble Hornets, and it's a story of the Slender Man, and he's terrorizing this college student, right? And then after that is whenever you start to get the games, like on the iPad, and that's about the time that my wife's nephew started getting into it, and I started becoming privy to it. But there were several games like on iPad.
I mean, even now on like Roblox, there's like tons of Slenderman games, and Roblox is sort of open source where it allows you to create your own games. People making Slenderman games literally daily on there.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. Because it kind of cascades into a movie.
Yep.
So in 2018, so Slenderman becomes so big that in 2018, Sony Entertainment makes a Slenderman movie. From what I understand, the movie didn't do so hot. But it just goes to show you how big this thing got.
Yep.
Slender Man literally started as a picture with a little bit of lore to where that somebody just created to in 2018, it was a movie. So, you know, in less than a decade, 9 years, it became a movie. So big turned into a big story that became very popular. Okay. So now here's where we're going to get into the interesting second part of today's episode. So, what ends up happening is the Slender Man thing gets really big, right? Starts from a story, people add lore over the years, you get games, and then you get movies. And then people start worrying about what they call the Tulpa effect. Okay, Richie, this was something I'd never heard of until this past week. So, do you want to explain to people what a Tulpa and what the Tulpa effect is?
Well, I first came across the term Tulpa in the occult, in paranormal research. Buddhists, Hindus, they have this belief that you can project enough intention and belief into a story, an idea, an image, an archetype, that it begins to take on life of its own and manifest physically in the way it's being described. So the more focused belief you have into this thing, the bigger it gets, the more intense it manifests. And in the paranormal, it's the reason a lot of people believe that people haunt themselves. Like with urban legends, urban legends can take... That's what they mean when the urban legends take on a life of their own.
Yeah. So so we've talked about Hellier before. We did a couple of chinwags. think it was last year now, where we kind of did a little bit of review of Hellier and that kind of stuff. And but if I'm not wrong, Greg and Dana Newkirk, who did the Hellier stuff, they actually did some like experimentation with this, right? Do you want to talk about that? How they would kind of go in and inject like a local lore, and it would manifest itself in that way?
Oh, even before Hellier,
yeah.
I've seen some experiments with Greg and Dana where they had a guy brought a Dybbuk box.
Now, what's that? I don't know.
A
Dybbuk
is like a Hebrew sort of concept for a demon.
Okay.
So a Dybbuk box, it plays on a famous case that everybody knows. The Dybbuk box was it was a Jewish sort of wine cabinet, mm-hmm. and inside was bound supposedly the spirit of this female-ish demon. And there's a whole sort of paranormal story that goes with it, the original people having experiences. But a Dybbuk box now, as sort of a general term, is a box that not necessarily contains the spirit of a demon, mm-hmm. but a sort of a nameless, faceless spiritual entity that takes on the identity of whatever attributes are being pumped into it. So whatever beliefs the person has that's holding the box, mm-hmm. or is around the box adapts and takes on those attributes.
Okay, so tell us a little bit how they would go into places and kind of inject in some lore, and it would manifest itself in that
way.
Well,
the guy that owned the Dybbuk box that was on set, he firmly believed that it was this Hebraic demon that was in the box, and the box reacted as such. So the box would speak through ITC instruments such as spirit boxes and things and tell the guy that it's a demon. Mm-hmm. Greg, it changed hands. Greg and Dana get the box. They spend time with the box. They talk to the spirit that's in the box. And basically, the more they engage with it, the more the box ends up reflecting their own beliefs on the box.
Interesting.
So the box at one point even admits that it's not a demon. It's just what people are calling a demon.
Yeah. So we kind of see them do something related, I guess you could say, in Hellier, right?
Yeah.
So they're looking for...
Just change the narrative, you change the outcome.
Right, yeah, so it kind of centers away, or goes away from that narrative to another narrative, which is the narrative of the Mothman, Indrid Cold, the Men in Black, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you start to see in Hellier the phenomenon manifest itself using those types of masks and tropes, right?
They play on it first before the Mothman fiasco. You see this same sort of being, energy, whatever you want to call it, manifesting to the native people as the Birdman.
Right.
And as time goes on, that shifts to people in the 50s and 60s believing in the Mothman. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of shifts into Indrid Cold. And even today, there's huge myths, lore, legend about Indrid Cold today. And that sort of story has grown just like the Slender Man.
One of the things that's really interesting to me about the whole Mothman, Indrid Cold, Men in Black thing is you don't hear about it much anymore. I mean, you hear of random sightings here and there, but not nearly like you did at the height of those events.
It definitely has like a cult following now.
Yeah, for sure. And that's interesting, right? That you still yet have phenomena happening out there, but it's not manifesting itself in the same way that it once did. Now, this is where I think that your definition of a thought form probably differs from the tulpa. The tulpa effect that we've been talking about here. So go ahead and tell people, the listeners, how your view of this, thought forms, that kind of thing, kind of differs from the tulpa effect a little bit. So this is, tulpa effect is Eastern, right? It's based in Buddhism, perhaps Hinduism. It's kind of this psych thing where you can project from your mind, create something in reality with enough focused intention and with enough focus and all of that.
It really plays on the occultic and Buddhist sort of ideas of inner divinity.
Yeah.
So it's like a psychic projection, so like mind over matter.
That's what I was trying to say, psychic projection. Yeah. Okay.
So they take it to mean that because we have this ability to project our mind over matter, our will over matter, to create these things from nothing, that we build this construct, this archetype, And the more people that focus in on this construct and believe in it and focus this intention to it, that it can actually gain consciousness, a life of its own, and it's sort of just released into the world.
Yeah, so it manifests itself.
Right.
We through our psychic projection.
Right.
Okay. Now,
and the only thing that needed to change that manifestation, or to change the way it interacts with humans, or the way it manifests, is to change the story, to inject new elements,
new lore,
to the story. Right.
New mythos, and it can take on that form. Well, it's the reason why you can go from place to place and you have similar type of stories, right?
Right.
Like every place has their own, say, cryptid lore, or they have their own ghost hauntings. And it's all similar and related, but it's always a little bit different, right? Like
right.
You go to Flatwoods, West Virginia, and then you have the Flatwoods Monster. You go a couple hundred miles to Point Pleasant, and then you have the same phenomena, but it's the Mothman.
Right.
So this is probably a good segue into your idea about thought forms and how it differs from the Tulpa thing. So yours is a little bit different. You've talked
right.
about it a little bit so far, but let's kind of spell it out for people. So you don't necessarily believe the Tulpa effect thing, right? Like
right.
people, psychic projection, they are manifesting this haunting or whatever. You think it's a little bit different than that.
Right? I can see where they're coming from with a lot of it.
Sure.
Like they definitely get it to a point where, okay, yeah, this is humanity creating a mask or an identity.
Mm-hmm.
They build this construct, but then instead of it being sourced and focused human intention,
mm-hmm.
I believe this mask, this construct, is then adopted and worn by a real spiritual entity. So a real spiritual being, like a demon, something like that, will
okay.
take on this identity and manipulate people and work people and manifest as that
yeah.
entity.
Yeah, it could be a spirit, right? Like a
right.
demonic spirit, or it could be fallen angel, fallen divine council member, or something along those lines.
Especially given the popularity of this mask at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, the demonic will assume that persona to gain worship, to gain a foothold in people's lives.
Which is interesting with some more of the stories that we're going to hear, because we're going to hear very similar language whenever we get into some of those. But so let me just make sure that I'm understanding you correctly. So you do think that these stories that people can create can be manifested in the real world.
Right.
Okay. And that happens by these people create a persona or a mask.
Right.
Which then is filled by a demon, a spirit, angel, fallen angel, something
yeah.
along with it.
Buddhists in the occultic community would say that it's entirely focused human will and projection.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a two-part approach. I think humanity plays a role in developing a mask,
yeah.
a persona, but then the fallen, the demonic, take on this role, this persona, and manifest and carry it out.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great explanation of the actual phenomenon, what you see. Like, why the phenomenon for a season manifests itself as Mothman and Indrid Cold,
right.
and then after that it manifests itself as a UFO explosion.
Right.
Or it manifests itself as the Flatwood Monster, and then it manifests itself as Slender Man. It seems that it's the same thing, but it's a different mask.
And you see this dynamic played out pretty openly in the paranormal. It's the reason why you could have a location that's known to be very haunted or very active, and you could have one team come in with a set of spiritual beliefs, and the phenomena reflect what they're expecting to see out of the location, or what they expect the phenomena to present itself as. And then you could have a completely different team come in the next day, and the phenomena of the activity reacts different to them, puts on a different persona towards them. So it rises to meet their cultural presets almost.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's really, really interesting whenever you get into it and you think about it. I'm going to have to think on that a little bit more.
Josh is stumped.
I've got some deep thoughts brewing on it. I'm trying to figure out what to ask about it. But well, you know, that's probably a good opportunity to move us forward here. Maybe some of those questions will come out later. No. I was going to say.
Oh, here we go.
the whole Tulpa effect and things. You know, that might sound strange to listeners, and we're not saying we agree with that. But
well, let me tell. I told you about a case about this hotel, about the bride, remember, that
died
in a fire?
Yeah.
Okay. There was a person that done an experiment with a haunted location. They went to a hotel and invented an urban legend about a bride that died on her wedding
night.
This
is what I was wanting you to talk about.
In a fire.
Yeah.
And it never happened in real life. It was just something that they were going to see if the activity that was being experienced in the building would take the form of these urban legends. Mm-hmm. So the more guests that showed up, the more the owners would tell them this story about the bride dying on her wedding night in a fire in the hotel, and it hadn't been rebuilt and things like that. As more and more people showed up coming to the hotel expecting to encounter this bride and retelling the story, eventually the phenomena started to shape and match the story. So people would come in there and they would smell the phantom smell of a building on fire or smoke.
Yeah.
They would hear a woman's voice. They would see a manifestation of a woman in a white wedding dress.
So you talked about this to me as programming a haunting.
Right.
You can literally program a haunting. That's to somebody like me who is, you know, this is outside of my wheelhouse. Like, that's kind of a mind-blowing thing for me to think about.
Actually, I know a lot of people that listen to us watch the show Supernatural.
Yeah.
There is an episode about a tulpa, and it's actually pretty spot on. I know that starts out with an urban legend, and the whole time they're injecting new elements into the story to change the manifestation. So,
well,
pretty spot on.
For those who haven't seen Supernatural like me, I've never watched Supernatural. Some examples of a tulpa, or, you know, or the wearing this mask like you're talking about.
Yep.
There's two of them that came to mind. One was Freddy Krueger.
Yep.
Okay, like Nightmare on Elm Street. One person has an encounter, and then they tell their friends about it, and then they start encountering it. And the more that they collectively pour their energy and their focus and their all of that intention into this being, the more he begins to manifest himself
right.
in the real world. This is one of my favorites, though. Ghostbusters.
Yep.
First Ghostbusters.
Oh, here we go.
Right? The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yep. Yep.
Right? Like, Ray ruins the whole thing, and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man manifests itself in the real world through that, through Ray thinking
yep.
about it whenever he shouldn't have been thinking about it. So, those are some examples for people who haven't seen Supernatural. But, okay. So, we've talked about the Tulpa effect. We've talked about how kind of the view that you're talking about here, how it differs from this a little bit. And, you know, this is somewhat related, I think. But I think that you see that in cultures, biblically and in the ancient Near East. They all encounter spirits, right? But they all have different stories related to spirits.
Right.
And it shapes how they react and deal with them, their encounters with them. So, for example, the Hebrews, right, they see spirits as being the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim from Genesis chapter 6, right? So their encounters with spirits are, it's negative, right?
Right.
For the Greeks, they believe that there could be good spirits and bad spirits. And it's the same with some of those other cultures. And so you see them interacting with daemons, right? Which is where we get our word demon from.
Right.
And they don't necessarily view it as a bad thing.
Right. And that's just generally the consensus of the occult community today. When they think about demons, like demons have a good side and a light side.
Yeah. Which we're going to talk about in the witch talk section of the uncut part today. But it's not identical. It's not spot on, but you can kind of see that, like there's narratives at play here. And whenever one encounters these spiritual beings, they're manifested according to that,
right.
that narrative, which the Bible gives the true narrative, obviously. We believe the Bible, right? We're Christians. So anyway, so with the Slender Man, though, we kind of start to see this somewhat.
Yep.
Like the Slender Man begin to manifest himself in the real world outside of the stories. And the most popular one is the story of two girls who stabbed one of their friends in Wisconsin.
So, oh, yeah. This was absolutely world news at the time.
Yeah, so it happened May 31st, 2014. So the stabbing took place in, it's called David's Park. It was a wooded area named, I'm guessing that's Wukesha. I'm sorry to the Wisconsin people who listen in. That is like an Indian native name, and I cannot pronounce it. But it looks like Wukesha.
We do our best here.
We do our best. I'm from West Virginia. You've got to work with me.
Right.
The best Indian pronunciation of a word I have is Kanawha. Nope. The Kanawha River. There we go. Right, Kanawha County. That's the best that I got. So, but during a game of hide and seek, Anissa Wire and Morgan Geiser, they pinned down their friend, Peyton Lautner, and they stabbed her 19 times in the arms and the legs and the torso with a 5-inch long kitchen knife. So two of her major organs were wounded. One of the stabs missed a major artery on her stomach. But here's the interesting thing. So Wire and Geiser, they tell her that they're going to go find help, but they're actually leaving her to die. And they didn't get any help upon leaving. But afterwards, the little girl, is able to drag herself to a nearby road where she found a cyclist. And the cyclist called 911. So afterwards, police is called, all that. And the girl, Geisner, they said, felt no empathy in what she did. But Wire described feeling guilty for stabbing the victim. But both of them said that they felt that the attack was necessary and needed to appease the Slender Man.
And you can just see the psychology in that as the way a lot of ritualistic cults develop the need to appease this deity, this construct that they come up with.
It's exactly the same. Yep. So they become obsessed with it, with the Slender Man, and they begin to center their lives upon it. Right, Jonathan Peugeot talks about this with our intent, with our intention and our attention. What we focus our attention on, it manifests itself. Right? It's very similar concept. And whenever we don't do that with God and we do it with an idol, it begins to manifest itself in the real world. And that's what's going on here with this. These girls are obsessed with the Slender Man, and the story, the narrative, begins to manifest itself in the real world. And the Bible is very clear about we're supposed to guard our minds, right? And we're not supposed to let every thought in. We're not supposed to let anything have free reigns in our minds, because stories are powerful.
Right. And if you just think of just in terms of the way the demonic operates, I mean, they're always looking for a doorway, a foothold into someone's life. I mean, you take a story that's already on fire, like Slender Man, something that's in the minds and hearts of people all over the world that are hearing about this as it's happening. I mean, this is the sort of thing that the demonic looks for to get into people's lives. So I can absolutely see how the demonic would begin to take on this persona to wear this mask. And
so it's interesting
stuff there.
The two girls referred to themselves as proxies of the Slender Man.
Yep.
All right. And so basically a proxy is a name, it's people who are under the influence or the control.
You hear the same language when you talk about people who practice mediumship, they're a conduit to a spirit.
That's it. So it says that they serve as an in-between for the Slender Man.
A medium,
A medium. That's it. That's exactly what it is. It's somebody who is interceding on their behalf. And you can see right there, that's how it begins to manifest itself through the proxy.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay. So that's not the only case. There are a couple more that we'll talk about before we...
I mean, you could really just say these girls were under kind of demonic possession.
We're going to get into that, because one of these stories that we're going to look at here towards the end, these are a little less detailed. But one of them has mention of demons in it. Yep. So the next story we're going to look at is another 2014 case. Actually, all these, I think, were 2014, which is interesting.
Yep.
The year of the Slender Man, apparently.
Year of the Slender Man.
Yeah. So in 2014, there was a girl in Florida who set her house on fire, again, to appease the Slender Man.
Honestly, just thinking about it now, I mean, I don't know when these two movies came out, or the original movie, but there's a movie
2018.
There's a movie called Sinister, and it's about this demon that's called the Eater of Children. They call the demon Bagul in the movie, and he literally starts to appear to these children and has the children sort of kill their families and sort of the same sort of ritual sacrifice.
Well, that's so the next case, another 2014 one. This one's in Ohio. So this is the same year across various states across the U.S. One girl attacked her mother with a knife in Ohio. Okay? So her mother came home, found her sitting in the floor of the kitchen with a white mask on, just a plain white mask, and she was just sitting in the floor, and whenever her mother approached her, she attacked her mother with a knife. Now, the interesting thing, Richie, is whenever they looked into her journal, okay, there was references to her appeasing the Slender Man and demons. Right? So, direct connection yep. between the Slender Man and demons, the demonic. So, really, really interesting.
Yep.
And really fits the narrative that we're putting forward today, which is, you know, this thing, your concept of thought forms and what exactly that means. So, okay. So, I say that to say this. So, looking at this story and what we know about the Slender Man, just looking at the how it originates and how it begins to manifest itself in the world through people who claim to be proxies. And interesting, it's little girls who are 14, 15 years old, right. You know? So what do we think about this? Like, is the Slender Man...
I mean, the fact that it's little girls and it's girls at that age really fits a pattern in the paranormal when you talk about psychic projections, when you talk about poltergeist activity. There's a noted sort of pattern that with the majority of the activity, it's focused around female children going through puberty mm-hmm. or at the other end of the spectrum, women going through menopause. So it's a season of this dramatic, like physical, hormonal, biological change in their life. So yeah. There's definitely a pattern there. It's
liminality.
Yep.
You're in an in-between.
Yep.
Right? It's kind of like two points of a chiasm in some way. Like you're on the you're not quite an adult yet, but you're not a child anymore.
Yep.
And then on the other side, it's you're not young anymore, but you're not quite old anymore. You know, yep. Or you're not old yet. So it's kind of like two corresponding points of a chiasm.
Those are usually the two high points in poltergeist cases.
It's fascinating. Okay. All right. So we're a little bit over 30 minutes in on this episode. So let's start to wrap this one up here. So whenever we look at the story of the Slender Man and we see how it starts off, right? It starts off as a paranormal Photoshop competition
right,
thing.
Yeah.
Dude starts it. He adds some lore, you know, and then it becomes this kind of open sourced mythos that people add to. But then it becomes a little more famous. It picks up steam, right? So it becomes, gets millions of views on YouTube through Marble Hornets.
I mean, you literally have people logging their sightings on social media. I mean, it spreads like wildfire through places like Tumblr, through these blogs. People are reading. People are really experiencing these tall, lurking shadows or these manifestations. I mean, they're experiencing real activity that is stemmed from this persona, this mask that was created.
So, you know, and it peaks in
right.
in popularity with the movie. Okay. Right. So
and that's when you see the height of the experiences, the right. manifestations.
So what do we now it's kind of died off, it seems right. like. It's not nearly as popular. And there's less sightings, it seems to be, since then too. Like you don't have a ton of stabbings of little right. girls because of the Slender Man now. So looking at this, Richie, what do we think about it? Like, do we think that it's imagination, overactive imagination, little girls who are afraid and they've been reading too many creepypastas, or do we think it's something more sinister?
I think it could play back and forth off of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I mean when I say it's a two-part sort of thing. The more we add to it as humans, the more we add to the construct, add to the narrative, the bigger this, I don't know how you would describe it, but it's a vehicle for the demonic, a real spirit to take and manifest with.
Yeah, so you don't see that as those two things as being opposed to one
right.
another.
They can feed off of each
they
other
can
and
feed
play
off
of each
one
other.
Another. Yeah, the more that one's imagination is centered upon and focused on this thing, and you have that fear there and,
right.
and all that things, it gives a void that can be filled by
right.
a
it's
real
just like
entity.
In cases of demonic oppression, that's why priests or ministers will tell the people afflicted not to feed into the fear. That's the whole point of the manifestations. The paranormal activity is to cause fear, and that fear causes the manifestations to grow, the entity to become more powerful. So it's the same sort of parallel back and forth.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me ask this. Whenever you look at other paranormal phenomena out there, say the Mothman, say the Flatwoods Monster, say the Hopkinsville Goblins, a lot of the hauntings that you see, do you think that they're also connected to this Slenderman type phenomena? That they are the creation of someone's mind, and that creation, that mask that has been created by a human, is something that is being filled by something perhaps demonic or something right. like that.
Actually, yeah, and one big famous case before the famous crash of Roswell,
mm-hmm.
you heard nothing about flying saucers or little green men.
Yeah.
After that initial report, that is the way UFOs and aliens are depicted and are experienced after that point.
Yeah.
So it's almost like that's what people sort of came to expect the phenomenon to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when they would encounter it, that's what they would experience.
Yeah.
Before that, you had one reference to a sort of a typical gray alien, and mm-hmm. it was the being Lamb.
Yeah.
Or Iowas that
Aleister Crowley
channeled
yeah.
and described. And his depiction, his drawing, was literally the first encounter with this sort of gray entity long before.
Why do you think that
the effects of Roswell?
This whole gray entity thing and Aleister Crowley, why is that the mask that the UFO takes on? Like, I would love to know what connection point there is.
Honestly, I think it just strengthens the point that it's demonic in source, that it's the demonic, there's a fallen spirit behind this manifestation. I mean, you see Crowley openly working with demons, and when the demons show up, it presents this image of this gray, sort of what we know as a gray alien, and then when people go to experience the events of Roswell later on, that's the same mask that this phenomenon takes even then.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, there's a connection between Crowley and Nazi Germany and UFO paranormal type yeah. stuff, right? Maybe there's a connection point there of some kind. I don't know. Interesting to think about nonetheless. I don't know. I would love to know the connection point there between Crowley and that, if there is one.
Oh, Hitler's Thule Society basically was, I mean, it's cut and paste the same sort of principles, the same sort of occult stylings as New Dawn, Golden Dawn, Thelema, mm-hmm. anything like that. They all yeah. are sort of in the same
yeah.
mixing pot.
Maybe that's the connection yeah. point there, because, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's all I'll say for now. okay, all right. So
we've got deeper stuff to talk about on that point, but
yeah, well, you know, it's beyond the scope of this episode,
right.
I think.
Yep.
Okay, so let's sum it up then. So we believe that the Slender Man is more than just an overactive imagination. It's certainly an overactive imagination, but it's more than that. The overactive right. imagination creates a mask that a real spiritual being can put on and manifest itself within
right.
the world. And the same thing is true with other phenomena out there as well, whether it be UFO, whether it be cryptid related, et cetera, et cetera. Would that be correct?
Right.
All right. Well, hey, you guys heard it here.
You guys heard it here.
You guys heard it here. All right. Well, Richie, we're coming in now on 40 minutes on this episode, and I think that we've about summed it up. We've went through the story of the Slender Man. We've talked about the Tulpa effect. We've talked about how we kind of think differently about that than, say, the Buddhists and the people in the paranormal community. Our view gives place for real spiritual beings to use these masks, and so it's kind of filtered through the lens of Christianity. In the Bible, and we've talked about the cases with the Slender Man and the connection it has with the demonic. And so is there anything else you want to cover before we move on to the uncuts?
Oh, we could go on and on and on about this. I mean, it's a widespread phenomenon. It's something that's It's a pattern that's noticed by any sort of paranormal investigator, anybody in the field. They just have their own take on it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's endless. We could literally talk about this for days.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think that somebody like a John Keel, for example, would just look at the Slender Man and say that he is another manifestation
of high strangeness.
Being manifesting itself through the super spectrum.
Yep.
Just a different mask that it's wearing, that kind of thing. So I think that you're right. Everybody who looks at it's going to have their own take on it. I guess you could say that's our take on it. And I guess that's about all that we got in this episode today. So, yep. All right. So at this point, we're going to transition over into our uncut portion of today's podcast. So, hey, if you want to hear us continue this conversation, head on over to Patreon. You can find us at www.patreon.com/swordandstafforder. For just $5 a month, you can get the Sword and Staff Uncut. And with the Sword and Staff Uncut, basically what you get is you get these uncut sections that we're going to have today. You get to hear conversations that's not going to be released anywhere else. You get exclusive podcasts that are dropped there that nobody else gets. We do monthly Patreon exclusives where we answer any and all of your questions that you have. We drop tons of things there in advance. We drop our episodes there in advance. I've been writing a story, and I released some concept art for it and a prologue to it. So you can find those types of things there. It's just a really great community. We've built up a really nice community there of people who support us. And I think that they're really happy with the content that we're giving them. And so you guys can get that too by heading on over to Patreon. So Richie, before we move on over to the uncut section, you got anything else you want to say before we sign off?
I'm good.
All right, guys. Hey, well, thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of the Sword and Staff, and we'll see y'all on the other side of the uncut portion.
See you then.
See ya. All right. Welcome to today's uncut portion of the Sword and Staff. And, Richie, we just finished up the episode on the Slender Man, and now we're going to talk about something that is semi-related, and that is witch talk.
Yep.
And so, all right, so explain for listeners, before we get started, what witch talk is, because I'm not on TikTok.
Anybody that has a TikTok, that's been on TikTok, you've come across the hashtag witch talk.
Okay.
And it is just a community of what started out as these hippie sort of Instagram teeny bopper witches, or witches, if that's what they want to call themselves, just dabblers pretty much, that congregated into this space and began to share knowledge with each other and just network. And then it grew from that into something a lot more darker.
Okay. So it's kind of like this hippie free spirit kind of deal. And we're saying, you know, they're identifying as witches.
Yep.
And now it's turned into something more.
Right.
Okay. So I'm not on TikTok. I've considered getting on TikTok. Is anybody else on TikTok who's listening to Sword Staff? If you're on TikTok, let us know. I've considered getting on there just because I'm starting to see more and more pastors get on there and making videos that engage some of this stuff. I've considered doing that. I just don't have the time, though, so that's kind of been the thing that's kept me from doing it. And I'm just really skeptical about what I watch and what I allow myself to see. I'm really picky and choosy on what I watch, like in terms of movies and TV shows and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've even got that way with social media too, like what social media platforms that I'm using. I used to use some more than I'm using now. And I don't know. So I just wonder if TikTok would be worth it for me to get on. I've had members in our church who's like, no, don't do it. It's no place for a pastor to be. So I don't know.
I mean, it first started out as like crystals and herbs and just some hippie stuff. And then it started taking a turn into deity worship.
Yeah.
And people learning to connect with whatever deity was reaching out to them. And the study of Hebraic mysticism and magic and demons, and a really deep dive into Solomonic magic, which includes things like the Goetia. And the Goetia has a book of 72 spirits or demons. It's literally the hierarchy of the infernal. So it's a hierarchy of demons.
Huh.
And it basically, on that's what it's turned into now. People openly working with demons and talking about the their experiences with the demons, getting to know the demons, their personal practice, the way the demons influence their practice. It's crazy stuff. I mean, coming from the occult, mm-hmm. I used to be huge into the occult, but even I had lines that I wouldn't cross. So I never worked with any deities or any demons or things like that.
When and you even, say work with, right. What do you mean by that? Because I know what you mean by that, but somebody else who's listening may not know what you mean by that. So whenever you say somebody's working with a deity,
right?
Like, what do you mean by that?
Like, in magic, you can only take things so far. You right. can pronounce your intentions, your directed will, but it's a spiritual force that carries out that will, that carries out those intentions. So okay. it's a foot soldier.
Okay.
Like, you give the order, and you can make deals with these beings, and in exchange for veneration or worship, they carry out your intentions.
Okay, so it's basically just like paganism in the Old Testament, then.
It is.
It's no different, really. Oh, sorry. It's, basically, it's, you're using worship, you're trading and exchanging worship to a deity to do what you want. It's basically ancient paganism is basically what it is. So, okay, I was thinking about this. What is the connection between witch talk and thought forms? And how are the two connected?
Probably the most prominent one that I've seen is their false constructs or their shallow understandings of spiritual constructs. So a big one is Lilith. Mm-hmm. You see Lilith being portrayed as this patron goddess of witchcraft, and she's people have these statues. I mean, occult stores carry these deity statues of their depiction of Lilith. And instead of Lilith being what we understand Lilith to be as a classification of demons, these creatures, people on Witch Talk, these practitioners have come to sort of create their own idol and give it the persona of Lilith, the name Lilith.
The mother of demons, the ex-feminist wife of Adam.
It's a complete construct of their own. It's not really what these Lilith beings are, or this classification of demons that we see in Hebrew mysticism and things like that. But this sort of depiction of Lilith is absolutely a thought form. So it's a projected image.
I was just thinking here a second ago, and this is something totally unrelated, and somebody else can maybe chime in on this, but you mentioned that there were 72 spirits in the Goetia. Okay, so explain what the Goetia is.
The Goetia is sort of a list of the hierarchy of the infernal. So it goes from kings to princes, dukes, and down from there, and their servants. And it's just an outline of their hierarchy.
Okay.
It's an inverted image of the angelic hierarchy.
You know, one of the things, whenever you kind of get into some of this divine council worldview type stuff that you learn is there's a textual variant. there are 70 nations from Babel that scatter out.
Yeah.
Some texts say 72 nations. So I'm just curious if the number 72 is significant in that it's connected to the nations of Babel.
Principalities over the nations.
Yeah, yep. Jesus sends out 70 or 72 disciples, and as he does, he says that he sees Satan fall like lightning. So, the number 72 has biblical significance.
Yep.
So I'm just curious if the Goetia is, like they're saying that the spirits are spirits that are attached to the nations or something like that. I don't know, but that was something that came to mind. So.
Oh, yeah, the number 7, the number 70, anything like that is really huge, and even in the occult, even in Scripture, even in the Bible. So, absolutely.
Yeah, interesting. All right, so, but what you're saying, though, is something dangerous is starting to go on here.
Another thing.
Go ahead.
The Goetia is part of the Lesser Key of Solomon, so it's Solomonic magic. So it's based on Hebrew mysticism. So
what do you mean about Solomonic magic?
There's a belief that Solomon was this grand magician. Solomon would in the base of the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. Solomon had this chamber where he would conjure, entrap, question, and sort of, I don't know really how you describe it. He would interrogate these demonic forces. And the Guaisha, the 72 spirits of the Guaisha are some of the demons that he encountered during the process.
Well, so that's not that out there. So that you see this kind of thing, I think it was in the Testament of Solomon. I think it's over there in the Old Testament pseudepigrapha that I have. I would have to go back and look. I think that we've talked about that a little bit. I could get it out, but I don't know if they
speak about Solomon having a ring, a signet ring that has signet the seal ring of Solomon given to him by an angel.
Yeah. This does tie into the whole Son of David thing, though, that you see in the New Testament. I mean, I know that sounds super out there to people, but like whenever Jesus is casting out demons, they're like, "What do you want of us, Son of David?" You know, that kind of thing. And Mike Heiser talks about it's called the Messianic Profile. And one of the expectations that they had was that the Son of David, the Messiah, would come and he would cast out demons. Why? Because there is this tradition in Jewish, Second Temple literature of Solomon doing things like that.
Solomon in the occult community is depicted as the first demonologist, the original demonologist. Okay. He sort of sourced the material that we know about the spirits of the Guaisha, about the demonic in general today.
Okay, so basically what's going on here is somebody is taking the the Testament of Solomon, and Solomon is this exorcist. He's casting out demons, and then for whatever reason they're taking. Oh, not for whatever reason. They're saying that the demons that he cast out in the Testament of Solomon are spirits that you can work with, and the Goetia is how to get in contact with those spirits. Maybe perhaps the rituals to use, sigils, kind of thing. Okay, all right. Well, that makes sense. I'm making sense of that now. I feel like I'm starting to get my wheels turning on some of this stuff here. Okay. Oh, that makes sense. So I'm guessing they're calling it Solomonic because these are the spirits related to Solomon.
Right.
So
it's spirits that allegedly Solomon.
It's kind of a misnomer. Yeah,
right.
They're kind of like saying, "Hey," it kind of makes it sound like Solomon's contacting these spirits, and but that's really not what's going on here. Okay. Makes sense. All right. So, but what you're saying here with witch talk is transparency. I grew up in a home where I had a mother who used to practice witchcraft, okay? It was nothing for me growing up to see, spell books laying around or tarot cards or, just that kind of stuff. But it was most, I don't want to downplay.
Again, huge in Appalachia. I mean, folk magic is everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to downplay it like it wasn't something big deal because I think that all of that is a big deal as a Christian. But, my mother, she was kind of like one of the hippie yeah. witches. You know what I mean? Like she, interested in things like transparency, marijuana, trying to do magic for money. And, it's Appalachian folk magic's tied in with that. Yeah. It's an economically poor area. That kind of stuff. So, I grew up seeing some of that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like tied to like weird, like herbalism and earthiness and, barefooting and, all that kind of stuff. But what you're saying is, okay, there is a change happening.
Yeah.
And it's more than that now. We've moved from the hippie version of this now to we are now explicitly working with demons.
Right. I mean, it speaks to even what the church's initial reaction to the New Age when it started.
Yeah.
They looked at the New Age and people were saying, oh, it's harmless. It's nature, it's crystals, it's herbs, it's natural medicine, remedies, things like that.
Yeah.
A sort of return to the primitive. Sure. But they warned that it was a gateway, a doorway into darker things. And that's exactly where it's taken a turn to now.
Yeah. And I've run across New Age proponents. We've had some even who've visited New Haven Church before. Who've into crystals and things like that, and it's very, they want you to think it's very benign, but it's
the slippery slope of all slippery slopes.
It's the gateway drug, right? Is what it is. It's
the spiritual gateway drug.
Yeah, it's the spiritual gateway drug. okay, so all right, so witch talk. I don't know. There's a part of me that really wants to get on TikTok and start roasting people. Let me know if you think that
I have before.
That Pastor Josh should get on TikTok and roast witches.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't mean that literally.
Yeah.
I don't mean that.
Yeah, Josh is not bringing back the witch trials. I mean.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's funny.
Josh is on their roasting witches.
Yeah, on their roasting witches. anyway. Yeah, so I don't know. I probably won't.
So that's what you were doing out there in the garden this week, building a pyre and a burning ground.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I was preparing. I was tilling the ground. Never mind. I'm not going that far. Anyway, but yeah, that's what it was. I got last year's fodder shocks to start a pyre.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, TikTok, witch talk's becoming a serious thing. Something that you should be looking out for.
I mean, and there's a new aspect of that I've been seeing that's really taking a turn to multi-generational things. Like I sent you that video of that woman teaching her. I mean, those kids couldn't be more younger than older than like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Teaching them to communicate with these beings, teaching them about the demons of the Goetia, about Lilith, about the tenets of magic. I mean, it's something that's being passed down, formalized, and really built up into this tradition. So it's pretty serious stuff.
Well, you know, we've been saying this for a long time, that re-enchantment is inevitable.
Yep.
You know, we've been saying that since we did the whole re-enchantment series that we did last year. Re-enchantment is inevitable. You're going to run into it, and you need to know how to deal with it, okay? Like, I promise you that in 10 years, you're going to be running into way more witches than you are new atheists.
Right.
That worldview, secularism, is collapsing.
Oh, atheism is all but dead. I mean,
it's collapsing on itself.
You have this generation coming out of parents and relatives that were part of that big atheist movement.
Yeah.
And so now they're spiritually starved, and they're looking for outlets of expression and answers to these big questions that are just innately human. I mean, it's part of who we are to ask these questions.
And the nihilism is only leading to a meaning crisis.
Right.
And people, whether you believe it or not, people cannot live in a world without meaning.
Right.
And so what they're doing is they're turning to things like witchcraft, and they're turning to witch talk. And you need to know how to think about this. And that's what we're here for. We're here to think about this, and we're here to talk about it, and you need to know how to think about it, because I promise you, you're going to be engaging that more than you are in the next 10 years. And you know, that's what people like Jonathan Peugeot and
that's the whole point Jordan behind Peterson. this new rise of paganism, and of this new big influence and attraction to paganism.
Yeah. People like Jonathan Peugeot, Jordan Peterson, they have basically shown that new atheism is dead. I mean, like, that's basically what their work is. It is basically a dismantling of the new atheism. You know, him and, you know, those two and Bishop Barron and, you know, John Vervaeke. John Vervaeke is not even a Christian, but, you know, he's kind of Platonic in some ways. Right. But basically they're showing that they're basically killed new atheism. You've got people out there like Sam Harris, who's, you know, basically a religious atheist at this point, who's got a meditation app out there.
Yeah.
But we're bringing this up today because we want you to know that it's related to thought forms. These people are creating beings in their head, in their minds, and they are being filled by real spiritual beings.
Right.
And you need to know that, and you need to know how to deal with it. You need to know how to think about it. You need to have the worldview to be able to engage it. And yeah, I guess that's all I got to say about that.
All right. We definitely need to do a new episode on the occult.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been talking about that for a while. We need to put that on our list of things to do. So, well, guys, let us know what you topics that you'd like to hear us cover. We've been talking about for a while doing a new episode on witchcraft, the occult, and stuff like that. So that's to come. We'll do that. And if there's anything else out there that you'd like to hear us cover, let us know. And well, Richie, that's about all I've got, unless you've got anything else.
Don't have anything else off the top of my head.
All right, guys. Well, hey, we hope that you enjoyed this week's uncut edition of the Sword and Staff. We know it's been a while since we've done an uncut one. It's just been busy, and with creating new things for Sword and Staff. Uncuts have kind of taken a back seat.
Right.
I know this one wasn't long. It was about 15 minutes. Well, maybe about 20 minutes or something like that. So we hope that it was at least helpful and maybe revealed something.
A good start getting back into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hopefully it revealed something to you that you have. Maybe you've not heard of Witch Talk, but now you have. And something you should be on the lookout for. And you're going to see witches all the time who are going to be like, they're going to be like, liturgy, that's witchcraft.
Yep.
Prayers, that's witchcraft.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge video on there.
Huge, huge thing if you haven't seen it already. And, yeah, we'll get into some of this stuff. Actually, it's all... I'll just go ahead and give you the answer. Actually, it's not witchcraft. Actually, witchcraft is a corruption of the true religion.
Right.
It is... Ritual in witchcraft is a corruption of liturgy. And it comes through the Fallen Watchers in the whole Genesis 6 event who bring true but distorted knowledge to humanity. And that's what it is. Liturgy is the true thing that puts you in contact with the one true God. And the rituals that witches have are a corrupted version of that. That puts them in contact with spiritual beings. So.
Right.
Anyway, I've got a lot more I could say about that, but that's about all I got.
That's Josh's hot take to end it all.
Drop my red pen.
There you go.
All right, guys. All right, well, hey, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Uncut edition of the Sword and Staff. We hope you enjoyed it. And, yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
See you then.
See ya.